things here.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, we have burrowed our way through Andrew Goss's entourage, because you have one of those entourages when you have a big film festival. He did for his film, The Four Presidents, and we got through the entourage, and now Andrew Goss is here. This is Patrick Timpone. It's the Real World of Money for Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018. And, you know, your only job, Andrew Goss, was to get Nicole's home number for Patrick, right? Yeah. And you just didn't score.
She wasn't giving it up. Dude.
She wasn't giving it up.
Absolutely
really,
not.
She's really?
Like, no way, Jose.
No, really. Uh-uh. Well, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I tried my hardest.
Was she the biggest star to come to your premiere?
Actually, Lou Gossett Jr.
was the biggest star. Yeah.
He was the most impressive man,
what a
I'll
guy.
Tell you.
How do you know Lou?
Through the film business, yeah. So, and a little bit through his foundation, Eracism, the Eracism Foundation.
Lou that Gossett. Sounds good. What is that
It
about?
Is good.
What's that about?
I'll tell you.
To erase,
well,
erase racism.
Erase racism.
Yeah. I like it. It was a great name.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was my opinion, and I shared it with him, that as a father figure, you know, as a role model for young American men, couldn't find a better guy than him, you know? I tell you what, they showed the clips from his lifetime of movies.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, from like 1964, he was active. So, you know, here's a guy whose career was like 60 years. Incredible. And
is he still working now? Or?
Yeah, he's still working.
No kidding.
And when they got to the part where... And we all remember Officer and a Gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Mayonnaise.
He was the drill sergeant and whipped Richard Gere right into shape. So,
yeah, that was one of his classic roles.
It sure was.
He's been at it 80 years?
Well, he's 80
I mean, I'm
years.
50.
He's
I'm
in
sorry.
His 80. He's been at it 60 years.
60 years. Yeah. Oh, wow.
60 plus now. Mm-hmm. So.
We're talking to Andrew about his film, The Four Presidents, which was a big hit at the Hoboken Film Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they showed the trailer the first night.
Yeah.
It showed a Robin Givens movie that was really, really good. I Never Heard. And it was about a young black man that never heard his father's voice. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, quite a thing to say. So anyway, they showed the trailer in that movie, and it drew quite a few people to the premiere.
Uh-huh.
So just from the trailer, folks wanted to get a peek at what that was about. And afterwards, I got a lot of positive comments. Of course, I imagine people just keep the negative ones to themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to put a few more eyes on the thing, a little bit of editing tweaks, but I hope to have it ready for DVD probably in 3 weeks, a month.
Well, I certainly hope so, because then we could do a big thing here on One Radio Network, and I don't know what we could do. We'll do something fun. When you release it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, going over the movie, I realize we've probably covered a lot of it right here on the radio. So maybe it'll be fun to see the multimedia version of The Real World of Money.
Uh-huh. Well, if you guys don't know who Lou Gossett Jr. is, I'll play a little clip here just for fun. You can listen to this here.
What you looking at, boy?
You laughing at me, dick brain? No, sir! You better stop eyeballing me, boy. I'll rip your eyeballs out the sockets and skull fuck you to death. Yes, sir! What's your name, boy?
Mayo. Zach Mayo, sir.
How did you slip into this program? I didn't know the Navy was so hard up.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise, right? Then he called him mayonnaise after that, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Lou Gossett Jr. Well, Andrew Goss is a currency historian and a nationally recognized one at that. He and also a big film producer now, and he knows all the big guys like Lou Gossett, and also not quite Nicole Kidman, but you know.
Well, funny story. So I'm walking out, you know, before the thing, mm-hmm. and hanging on the outside, and Martin Cove comes up, the guy from Karate Kid, the sensei, and we know each other. And I walked up, I was like, Martin, how you doing? And he looked at me like right through me, like, who are you?
Do I know you?
Do I know you?
I don't know you.
And I just went, okay, thanks. And I walked away. And then later in the night, when we're done, the movie's over, we're all sitting around the table. He looked right at me and he recognized what he'd done, you know. And he stopped. He goes, I'm sorry, man. I meet a lot of people. I guess you do.
I guess you do.
But it put me back in my place in case I thought I was somebody. He did not recognize me at all.
Yeah. If you'd like to be on the show, please join us. It is Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Or you can also use the telephone that nobody does. It is 888-663-6386. That is 888-663-6386. You know, when you look at $21 trillion in debt, it seems like a lot of money.
It's not.
I mean, it seems like a lot. But then if you look at world debt is what?
94.
No, 200,
yeah.
I read.
I don't
That's
buy
not
that
true.
Number. Yeah, I don't buy
Somebody
that
just make that up.
That's a big number. But yeah. Okay, IMF figures show 94. But if we go with the...
How could it be double? I mean, so maybe what I read was just really bonkers. I don't know.
Well, maybe it included some stuff that mine doesn't include.
I see. Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
Yeah, you just never know. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, in fact, that my number was sovereign debt. So you could be right. If you throw in consumer debt.
Oh, it's probably everything.
Yeah.
Probably everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're writing these articles, you want to make it really look bad.
Yeah.
Right. So you just add everything in there. We call that fake news.
Yeah, right.
Or something like that.
Something like that.
So I was reading an article that I thought was pretty curious by, you know, Martin Armstrong?
Sure.
Yeah, pretty interesting guy. I mean...
I don't know him. Yeah, I mean, know of his writing.
But he's got a lot of wacko stuff. But then if he really looks deep, I like a lot of the stuff that he does write about, because he was writing about the dollar, how the dollar was very strong during the Depression. Is that true?
Yes.
So that led up to then the gold confiscation. So to tie those two together, what was FDR? What was he thinking? Did he have too much coffee?
No. A deflationary depression is when the value of the dollar rises, because people are constantly trying to gather the limited supply of dollars to pay the debt.
Gather dollars. Okay.
Yeah. If you look at the situation that we've grown back into that we had in 2007, where you have three times as much debt as there is money. And so folks are constantly on the hunt for money. They need money. There's a liquidity crunch is what it's known as. And people are gathering dollars at all costs in order to pay their obligations. And in doing so, prices are driven down, and the dollar or the currency unit, whatever it might be, is driven up. It becomes
more
strong.
Precious. It's more
That's
precious,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as prices fall, asset values fall, then suddenly, well, people that own stock on margin are forced to sell it. Margin call, gentlemen. And people that own real estate or companies that are leveraged have to pay the debt, and so they sell the company or the real estate. And that forces the value of other real estate or companies down, stocks and bonds, everything suffers, and the currency unit becomes more dear, more precious. And it stays that way until the central bank makes the choice to increase the supply of money. And if they do, well, then we come out of the crisis. And if they don't, then we go deeper into it.
Deeper. So what they did was, the boys, they decided not to bail anybody out or not to increase the money supply in 1929.
Right. Not to inflate the currency.
Not to inflate the currency.
But rather to confiscate the gold.
Woo. So they said, that's what we'll do, and that's going to drive the price of the dollar down.
Well, no. It was a two-pronged approach. So it would be like the government saying, okay, everyone has to sell your house to the government
right.
at the official price.
Yeah.
in this case, everyone has to sell your gold to the government at $20 per ounce. And once all the gold was gathered up, then they increased the price of gold to $35 an ounce.
Well, I'm really shocked that they did that because, well, I mean, how long was there? And then when people went up to the Federal Reserve or the banks and said, what happened? I got screwed here. You know what happened?
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You get nothing. You lose.
Well, in this case,
good day, sir.
Good day. You get $20 an ounce.
But I was there. My grandpa was there, and he recorded that. So, wow, isn't that what was the time frame in between giving people 20 and then getting the gold and then raising it to 35 just to make themselves more rich?
Days. Yeah, really? Days. It really was quick. Yeah.
Of course, back then, I guess not a lot of people. It's not like you had the internet or Walter Cronkite. How would people really know?
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
I mean,
unless you read the papers of record. Right.
But they were probably controlled by the boys, too.
Of course. It goes back to the founding of the Republic. The competing publications, much as there are today, each presenting a different side of the argument. But in the case of Roosevelt recalling gold, he figured he could spend the money better than Americans could.
Good for FDR.
And so he gathered all this gold up and then used it as the basis for an issue of new money. And these gave us the WPA, Work Projects Administration, and the Civilian Conservation Corps, essentially put people back to work.
So, but he was such a guy that he
socialist.
But he actually felt more comfortable with having the Fed inflate the money supply by him borrowing money from the Fed, right?
Yeah, well, sure.
That because they had gold.
They had more gold. Yeah.
But he actually thought about it today.
They don't care.
Yeah, they don't even care. You know,
right.
It's like President Trump will do $1.5 trillion in red over a year, and does he care how much gold we have?
No.
No.
I don't think it even comes into the equation.
No, it's not even in the equation anymore. So things have changed.
Well, yes, they have, and not only...
At least FDR was thinking about it.
He was, but we have now an ECB, European Central Bank.
Oh, my goodness. Get me started over there.
I was doing a little back-of-the-envelope math 2 days ago.
Where are you now?
Yeah, and I came up with this number. It's startling that 50 cents out of every euro that the European Central Bank issued over the last 8 years went directly out of the euro and into the dollar.
Whoa, you mean all of these? I thought Draghi was over there, Andy, buying European assets and corporate and stuff like
bonds
that.
Bonds of every sort. Yeah. And so a European investor, central bank knocks on the door, if you have the knocking sound.
I don't.
And,
I do.
Okay. Yeah. We want to buy your Italian bonds. And so the investor or institution sells their Italian bonds and gets a pile of euro from the ECB.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look at each other and say, well, what do you want to do with all these new euro?
Yeah.
And they say, well, let's buy dollars. And so they do. And
that's how it works.
Yeah, well, 50 cents.
So that's been driving up the dollar as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, that's been driving it up. But, so let's stay in Europe for a while because Armstrong was saying this is the biggest problem, and I want to see if you agree.
Yes.
He said the biggest problem with Europe is they don't have a consolidated debt like we do here.
Duh, where have we heard that before?
I mean, that's true, though, isn't it? It would be almost like every state in the union
issued
its own bonds.
Now, we talked about that many times, haven't we? Right, about the idea of a unified European debt instrument, much like the U.S. Treasury bond. Well, they don't have that.
Well, we hadn't talked for a couple of years.
Been years.
Yeah.
But we're a little always ahead.
Oh, so, so you're a couple of years ahead of Martin Armstrong. So why does that matter to you money geeks? I mean, what's going on with that unified?
Well, it's as you said. Imagine if only New York had bonds that were worth anything or that were strong in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Then everything would be pegged to that bond. And in the case of Europe, it's the Bundesbank.
Oh, so everybody kind of looks at old Angela and say...
That's right. What's going on with the Bund?
With the Bund.
Yeah, and when Mario Draghi decides he's going to buy something to inject liquidity, he buys the Bund. Right, he doesn't buy the lesser country's debt. And the idea was, if the way that Alexander Hamilton presented it, let's say the ECB assumes all of the debt of all of the member nations.
Which they did revolution, right?
That's what the assumption, right.
That's what Alexander had in mind.
Involve everyone, right? And so and everyone is for it. Oh, you're going to buy all of the bonds outstanding in every nation in the East, in the European community, and then you're going to issue a single bond that's backed and good by European standards.
Yeah, European Union.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what essentially Hamilton and the boys got together and did after the revolution to pay, you know, to pay the debts.
That's right.
So then they had the United States debt, and all you guys, these 13 colonies or whatever, you guys are all good.
That's right.
And all we're going to do is tax you and give you vaccines. Whatever. Sorry. I didn't mean to do that one.
That's funny, though.
I didn't mean to do it.
A little tax, a little vaccine, and you're good.
Roll up your sleeve there. Let me show you.
There you go.
Let me show you what we got for you. Oh, boy. So then in 85, didn't the dollar, what was this Paris thing about? This Paris Accord. No, it wasn't the Paris Accord. Sorry, what was 1985? Oh, here it is. The dollar was really strong in 85.
Right.
They did the Plaza Accord.
Plaza Accord.
And
that's right, New York.
What happened there?
Well, then there was an agreement behind closed doors.
Oh. It always happens.
That the rest of us didn't know about.
Yeah.
But that the people in the room knew about.
Yeah.
That they were going to readjust.
Oh.
Revalue.
We could have
currency.
A global reset?
Well, it didn't happen like a reset would, like boom, overnight, there it is. But rather, it was a gradual ramping up. So,
of?
The strength of the dollar, or the strength of the yen.
I thought the dollar went down after the Plaza Accord.
Boy, did it go down.
Like 40% or something.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Wow.
And the main culprit at the time was the yen.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that when we had gold and silver coin and they wanted to devalue the dollar by 40%, they had to debate it in the well of Congress and then and vote on it. And then the president had to sign it. And then they actually changed the content of the silver or gold coin that represented the dollar. That's how we got to the devaluation part.
Well, you're just such a Constitution stickler.
Sorry.
You know, I mean,
all knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And if you had earned a dollar in, say, 1820, or a $5 gold piece, you put it away. And all of a sudden, the new $5 gold piece had $4.50 worth of gold in it.
Whoops.
Well, it didn't affect the value of your previously held $5 gold piece. If anything, it made it worth more. And what most of the speculators did was, of course, melt the old ones to get the, $5.50 or whatever the new value would be. So this is it's undoable in today's era of homogenized money, where if they reduce the value of the dollar by 40%, not only does it affect every newly issued dollar, but it affects every dollar that everyone holds.
Yeah.
Sure. Doesn't matter where you hold it, whether you hold it in the United States or in China or on a pallet in South America, it is instantly devalued. And so it's much more effective as a means of monetary control than having your money free and circulating among the masses.
So the world is not happy when the dollar is strong. It makes it more difficult for them.
That makes it more difficult for us because...
And for them too, for everybody, right?
Yeah, sure.
So that's why Trump and Mnuchin are always trying to talk down the dollar.
Well, the belief there, especially in the executive circles, is that the dollar is too strong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind sharing that view. Where are we today, by the way? I've been holding my breath as we...
Well,
it's been a rough month.
It's been pretty active. Let me go to my famous Kitco place, and here we are. Dollar is, it's 93.98. It's almost 94.
Almost 94, yeah.
Wow.
So that...
You didn't think this was going to happen, did you?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I did think that we would have temporary strength, but I don't see any support. So I try not to worry about it, sort of like whistling past the grave.
What do you mean you don't see any support?
There's no support. The fundamentals have not changed. The only reason the dollar is as strong as it is because the rest of the world's currencies
are worse.
Yeah, and getting worse. Yeah. So you look at the Italian picture, there's a liquidity crisis that's brewing in Europe that I think could be so much worse. I mean, if you look at where we are, corporate debt to GDP, we're at the last peak. Just before the crash in 2008, we were at about 45% corporate debt to GDP.
In U.S.?
In U.S. And we've climbed now from 39 to 45 in the last 5 years. And when it, I mean, I can't imagine it being much higher than the previous peak. So we're right on the precipice, as they say. I just didn't expect a 94 handle on the on the U.S. dollar index.
So then what happens as the liquidity crisis gets worse? When you say on the precipice of what? I mean, what happens? I mean, there's some kind of wall hit or some kind of event, or do we all just go in a fetal position in our bed, right? And just, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
That kind of thing?
Well, what triggered the crisis then? So, like right now, you have money managers all over the place telling their buyers or their clients that you need to raise cash because a market correction is in the works.
Whoops.
And you want to be ready to rush in and buy these great deals. So, lenders, for their part, want to sell in that crisis, as they did the mortgage-backed securities in 2008. And that's the point. Who do you sell it to? Nobody wants it. So what do? They have to lower the price. And as they lower the price, of course, that forces the markdown across the board. So it's the very same thing that happened in the Great Depression, is that borrowers had sold or borrowed money short term and then bought long-term assets. And you can't roll over the debt. So I pointed out how, for example, 60% of the nation's debt, the national debt, is coming due and payable in Mr. Trump's first term. So we're forced to roll it over. Obviously, we can't pay it, so we have to buy more. This has been flattening the yield curve.
The old flat yield curve.
The old flat.
And that's when the 10-year and the 30-year get more equal.
Well, the 2 and 10.
I thought it was 30. Okay, the 2 and 10.
Yeah.
Okay, the 10 is 3.
And we'll call that the intermediate.
Yeah. So the what's the 2-year?
I have no idea. 2 and change. Yeah. And, of course, the 6-week and 8-week, 6-month paper, all of it is ratcheting up. So the prospect for higher interest rates is becoming crystal clear. Now, this at the same time that corporate debt and high-yield debt has just been exploding. I don't know how to put it any other way. But I did hear some encouraging news today, and that is that the regulators are going to loosen the tough restrictions put on banks. So if a bank was greater than $50 billion in assets, it had to have a living will. You know, this is how we're going to die if we die. And they had to keep higher reserves. What do they call them? SETIs. Systemically.
That's when you look for extraterrestrial life. No, that's SETI. Extraterrestrial.
Yeah, close enough.
Intelligence, SETI.
Yeah, we're looking for intelligence, but we can't find any, especially not when it comes to the banking business. So the idea that the regulators came down hard after the crisis of 2008 and sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater and put these restrictions on banks. Any bank greater than $50 billion had to have this, and they were deemed strategically important financial institutions, something. I have to look that acronym up. But MetLife was one of the primary fighters of this and said, no, wait a minute, you can't call me that. I'm just an insurance company. And they said, no, you're not. You might think you're an insurance company, but you're really a bank, and so you've got to follow these same regulations. And a lot of the small community banks and state banks and member banks that were just over the $50 billion found themselves, oh, well, we better limit our activities so that we don't have to follow this burdensome regulation. Well, now I understand they're eliminating this, not eliminating it, but raising it from 50 to 250.
Huh.
So as long as your bank's assets are less than $250 billion, then you don't need an exit plan. and you don't need a greater reserve requirement. Now, this will, you know, it'll free up some liquidity, but it won't fix the problem.
Now, they're also doing something to dismantle Dodd-Frank, right?
That's what we're talking about.
That's what you're talking about, the Dodd-Frank thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So market-making abilities by the major banks, it disappeared with Dodd-Frank. And bond market liquidity has hedge funds and other non-bank lenders buying these bonds, but they're not really market makers. They don't have to be there. There's nothing requiring them to buy when you want to sell. And that means that there can be a no-bid market just when you need a bid. So, you know, a market maker will always make a bid, even if it's lower than the one before. They give the illusion of liquidity. And that really is a problem right now. As soon as a liquidity crisis hits, you can't call your local bond dealer and say, okay, I want to sell these corporate bonds, or I want to sell these municipal bonds. And this is something that borrowers and lenders have gotten used to, the idea that you can buy when you want to buy and you can sell when you want to sell. Imagine having this huge position in bonds and going to sell and finding there are no buyers. There's just no one that wants anything. So what do? You hold or you drop the price?
You hold till you fold them, or what's that song? Something like that.
Got to know when to hold them.
Got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them is what you got to do. Andrew Goss and Patrick Timpone, we're going to have fun this morning. Join us. Question, comment, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, I'm glad it's kind of good. I think you're going to do your film career sounds like more on the East Coast, right? Maybe New York will be your base. Because out West, I'll tell you what, I don't think you want to go out there and mess with these guys. Hollywood, honoring Stormy Daniels with a key to the city.
Sure.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Absolutely.
Can you imagine how bonkers these people are?
No, that's perfect.
Is it any wonder they produce movies that nobody wants to watch anymore?
Very fitting.
You know, the only thing that they're doing, they're making money, are these massive adventure, good and evil things, and blow things up, and wonder person, and boy, nothing's coming out of Hollywood. These people are, I think they got way too much cocaine, or coffee, rather. I mean, something. Isn't that weird? Can you imagine?
That's
just weird.
Doesn't strike me as weird. I've sort of written the whole thing off. You're right. I'm definitely an East Coast guy.
You're going to be an East Coast guy.
Yeah,
you're going to be an
I don't think I'll go any further west than Texas.
Yeah, I think that's about as far as you want. Plus, you got Austin, which is a great film capital.
Sure.
You'll be down here just doing your film moguling.
Yeah, the only film moguling I'm interested in doing is films such as Four Presidents that educate Americans to their plight.
Yeah, to their
That's
plight.
That's it. That was the whole intent. It wasn't to make a movie. It was merely to get the word out. I'm just merely trying to educate Americans to their plight, because I'm shocked to find that the majority of Americans have 100% of their wealth denominated in Federal Reserve notes, you know, in an account somewhere.
You're not really shocked, are you?
Yeah, I am.
Why?
I am. At least you expect to have something. And we now have a bond market that's essentially doubled in size since 2008. Hmm. And the market liquidity mechanism that was existing in 2008 is now 90% gone. It doesn't exist. So you can't just sell your bonds into a willing market if there's
just not
any.
There,
it's just not there.
Yeah, who wants to give somebody their money for 10 years for 2% or something, or 3%? I mean, it's not even. So I know that you buy and sell gold coins for a living. That's what you do. Your company's SDL.
That's right.
And it's in Hawthorne and also Hilton Head. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure our listeners are wondering if you're going to be offering the new Trump Kim Jong Un thing. Bust a
T-shirt?
No. The mint is a coin. They're doing a coin. Did you see the coin?
No, I did not see.
They're doing a coin. The mint has already done a coin.
Yeah.
To commemorate this party that they're going to have with old Kim.
Are we talking about the Korean mint?
Yeah.
Certainly not the
U.S. mint. Google it during the spot.
You probably should.
But so I mean, I wanted you to let people know that they could probably get this coin from you.
No. Oh. They probably can't get the coin.
Well, come on.
The only thing I sell are established rarities.
Oh, I see.
So I won't get involved in any of this, because the way that a Kim Jong-un Donald Trump coin would be marketed is we're going to make 10,000 of them, and the sponsors are going to hold back 3,000 of them, and then they're going to promote the hell out of 7,000, and then as soon as the 7,000th one is sold, then they're going to dump their 3,000 and further depress the price, and then the market disappears. So we don't deal in those. We stick with the established, tried and true classic rarities, 50, 100, 150-year-old coins that have already been widely distributed in the marketplace. There's no overhang or hoard, known populations, known graded quantities, and active bids and asks, buys and sells. So those are the ones we focus on. No new issues whatsoever.
So you're not going to do the Kim Jong.
No.
Okay. The White House is being mocked after releasing a commemorative coin which featured a slimmer-looking Donald Trump head-to-head with rather larger Kim Jong-un. The item was minted by the White House Military Office, which designs coins for Mr. Trump's trips abroad. Oh, so it's not the mint.
It's not the mint. It's not money.
White
it's
House
not a dollar.
Military Office.
Yeah, it's a token. It's a medal. You want to buy a medal, go ahead.
Oh, I see. I see.
This is not calling it an investment.
This is a medal.
Well, no, when the Mint issues a coin, it's a big deal.
Okay, so that's why you would have known.
I would have known months ago. There's no way you can say today. Like, because in order to have this coin, months and months, maybe even years ago, somebody would have had to introduce a bill into Congress. And then debate, and pass a law, sign the law. Then the Mint goes to work and designs and puts the coin out.
See, I must have heard that on fake news, because they said the Mint.
Of course they did.
They said the Mint. No, it was on NPR.
Of course they did.
They said the Mint.
Yeah, not happening. Huh. Not monetary metal. And, you know, they make a lot of stuff inside the Mint that isn't monetary metal, too. So I really, I shouldn't say it that way. But I'll put it this way. It's not a coin. It's not a legal tender United States coin.
So if the dollar is going to be strong for a while, why would this be a good time to buy like coins from you? Because gold is going to stay pretty stable for a while, it looks like. It's just not moving around very much at all.
Yeah, it's all going to be dependent upon, you know, what is going to happen in the bond and liquidity market.
Mm.
That's it.
So...
And when do you want to buy this stuff? It amazes me.
Today.
That when it's low.
Today.
And I tell people, you should buy. No, today. No, they today. Wait until it's
today.
Higher.
I want to buy today.
Then I want to buy.
I want to buy today.
It doesn't make sense.
I want to buy today.
And this is why my program, what I advise, and I have since forever, is to average your way in. You don't just jump in, you know, make all of your, you don't save all of your money at one shot. You do it the same way that you save money, a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there. You just build in a stack.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep adding to it.
Yeah.
Prices are low, you add to it. Prices are high, you add to it. And at the end of the line, you look back, and the stack is rather impressive, and the value is also rather impressive.
I remember when my grandpa crossed over to the great beyond and to a new adventure. About 2 years later, my grandma found a whole box of coins. So my grandpa, and they weren't anything special, you know, but they were just coins, you know, that he would just put them
stacked
in.
Stacked up.
I mean, he had a lot of, you know, just half dollars, quarters, dimes. And back then, I wish I'd had them today. Those were real silver guys, you know, because this was, I think, 1960 or so. When did they turn the coins from silver to copper?
64. Right after the death of President John Kennedy.
Well, those rascals, that has no connection there.
No.
Really?
No. Now, that was the theme of Four Presidents, obviously. And, you know, the reality is that we, in the days of John Kennedy and before, when people bought a bond, they intended to hold it until its maturity date.
Sure. Like in the movies, they always had these bonds in a shoebox, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah, in the old
movies.
So
you buy 10-year bonds. At the end of 10 years, you get your money.
Yeah.
You buy a 30-year bond.
And plus you were getting money every month.
Yeah, or it was accumulating within the bond. Like,
oh, you could actually save everything?
Like a savings bond you buy for $37.50, and then at the end of the term, it's worth $50. right?
Oh, that's what a savings bond is.
Yeah. So investors were used to this holding bonds to maturity.
Yeah, that's what we did.
That's what, yeah.
That's what everybody did.
But lately, people think they can buy a bond today and turn around and sell it tomorrow.
Well, that's what the whole bond market is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but
it's also all day trading now.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got $2 trillion in bond ETFs and mutual funds that isn't owned by long-term investors who hold until maturity. And when they all say, oh, you know what? I want to cash out my bond fund. Give me the cash.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bids.
Yeah,
there's no one to sell to.
Yeah, who wants them? Yeah.
Wow. So in the previous cycle, the Federal Reserve, of course, said, okay, we'll buy them. And they took up the liquidity. It cost, I don't know how many trillions of dollars.
A lot of trillions.
Yeah. But many are arguing, and I do follow them, that it's on us right now. It's a credit cycle, not an economic cycle, according to Peter Belkvar, who's the CIO of Bleakley Advisory. So he was at a dinner in New York, and he says, yeah, we don't have economic cycles anymore. Now we have credit cycles. So people were thinking, like, what is he talking about?
What's he talking about?
Yeah. So it's not a recession that triggers a bear market. It's just a liquidity or liquidity crisis or crunch, similar to what's going on in Italy right now, at this very, as we speak, so to say. So is this, as this liquidity crisis unfolds, it drags everything with it. So we have such a crisis brewing right now. We'll see what they say or what they do.
Okay. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. I had a pretty amazing experience with spraying this mold relief from Living Streams in my home Friday. Friday, and then I did it again Saturday, and then I'm going to do some more today. We've learned over the years from George Swanson and other people that all sheetrock is just mold. It just does. I don't care. Just mold. It just does. It wicks the humidity, and you could probably break open your walls now if you've had it 10 years and find mold there. It's a very silent, kind of a dumb thing. You can, we have shows on mold. But anyway, there's this product, and it's not quite in the store yet. But if you want to wait like 3, 4, 5 hours, Sharon's going to get it up there, and you'll have a link right in there. And it just comes in a quart, and you got to get yourself a fogger. And we also have the fogger in our store. We don't make a commission on it because can't go through Amazon. So we just put one in there. It doesn't matter. I just want you to be able to see what it is, and you could buy one and maybe get somebody in your neighborhood, 2 or 3 people go in if you want to fog your own. It's very easy to do. There's no staining. There's just no muss, no fuss kind of thing. You'll probably want to get a mask because if you've got a lot of mold in your lungs, you could really detox fairly, very quickly, and it would be ugly. But I tell you what, I felt a noticeable, palpable difference in my home after I did it. And Doodle and I went through a little detox for a couple of days. And then I put some of this material in a nebulizer, and I breathed it in there. And then I had flu symptoms the whole night. It really is amazing. And I knew what it was, so I didn't mind it. It was great. I was just curled up in my blankets and just felt like I had the flu. Definitely I had some moldies going on in my lungs, you know, or somewhere in my body because it detoxed it out. It's a very powerful product. And if you just have sheetrock in your home, be a great idea. It's not expensive to do it. The machine costs more than the mold product does, but you maybe even rent one. You can maybe even rent one. That's an idea. I hadn't thought about it till just now. They have little places you can rent if you can get the proper kind. So I'm going to give you a number here that you could call if you want to just talk to Marilyn right now and get this. Tell them you're a One Radio Network fan. 360-912-2981. That's 360-912-2981. It's called Mold Relief. And if you want more information about it, she'll give you Wayne's number. You can talk to him. But it's really cool. And I'm going to do my whole house again. The one bottle does about 8,000 square feet, so I could do my home like 3 or 4 times, you know? But I'm going pretty heavy. But it doesn't stain, it's not sticky, it just, I don't know, it's just this magic little probiotic. mold substance and some kind of a material that he invented, or some kind of an herb or mushroom or something, but it's in probiotics, so it really makes it powerful. And he says it'll work for about 2 years. Pretty amazing. You can go out there and do a mold relief now, look in the on the internet on your home, and it's thousands of dollars. I mean, and they don't even get it all. They don't even get it. The best one would be ozone, but it's very expensive. But this this is a great product. So it's called mold relief, and you can actually nebulize it. But be careful. Don't just go and do it like I did, because you'll just get the flu. The number is, well, not really, but you know what I mean, 360-912-2981. It'll be in our store this afternoon, and then you click on there too.
Starving for vitality, we're turning to energy drinks, stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern-day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support. Improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol, and protected in Miron glass, our elk antler is available in 3 strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
We got a big sale right now going on at Daniel Vitalis, and he's a Thrival Link. If the big sale, you can get the Platinum, the Velvet Gold, or also the Velvet Silver. It's just a matter of strength and big, big savings. So check it out. You don't have to have a, no promo code needed. Just click on any Thrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com. Scientists warn that 5G tech found in Wi-Fi street lamps is causing insomnia, nosebleeds, and stillbirths. What? Man, it's, these people are... a lot of dumb stuff going on out there with EMFs. We think one of the best ones that I know about, I can just say one of the best ones I know about is this Blue Shield, and also Ken Roller's Golden Pyramid that you could put in your bedroom, but that just goes out a few feet. The Blue Shield go out through your whole home, and I think this is going to really help you if you're interested. Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device, and he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body, and then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body's experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page Blue Shield EMF protection device on OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, the karma that we have going on by living in 2018 is pretty interesting, right? Dealing with things like, you know, there could be a whole lot more mold out there, and I think there is, and people know about, and these electromagnetic fields and then the GMOs and stuff. It's like, wow. So we really came into a time where we have to be clever if we want, to be creative, you know, to be bold, if you will, to be open-minded, if we want to have a nice long life without being sick. I mean, it's boring. I mean, you can get on drugs and do surgery, and they can keep you going to your 80, you know, just, you know, but what kind of life is that? But there, you know, there are natural ways to figure this out. So if you want to go to your grandkids college education or college graduation, that'd be a nice goal, you know, something like that. Well, you got to take care of yourself, and we have tools out there, and so we try to provide some of the best ones that we know about. There may be better ones out there. If they are, let us know, and we'll check them out on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well. Andrew Goss, and boy, when you get governments involved in this from the UN with things like Codex and the FDA involved with, farms and not looking at things closely and looking out for people's lives, man, it's just, it's like, whoa. It's a challenge. It's a challenge being here, isn't it?
Indeed it is, yeah. Well,
I'll tell you what. If only we could get a government that really cared about our well-being.
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
You would think with all the money that we pay, what do we pay? $2 trillion in taxes? $3 trillion?
Yeah.
That's just in 1040.
Income tax.
Income tax. $3 trillion. And then you have corporate taxes, and then you have telephone taxes, and then whatever. Then you have gas taxes, and then in California you get taxes if you collect rainwater. Whatever, taxes now to drive. You would think that for that money, you'd have an organization, some kind of help to, regulate this. I don't like regulations, but somehow somebody has to be out there saying, you really can't, put this stuff in a vaccine.
Right.
Or you really can't put this stuff in food, right? Or you really can't put that stuff in the river, like
best practices.
MTBE that stuff in the groundwater in California from rocket fuel.
Sure.
You would think you could get that for $3 or $4 trillion.
Well, that's where you think wrong, Patrick.
Chew.
You actually believe that regulation is intended to protect us?
Well, I used
it's
to
not.
When I was a kid. No.
Yeah, we always thought of it that way.
Yeah. Wow. It's really something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Really something. And I guess it's probably never even possible to get somebody in there whoever, a Donald Trump 0.20 to even would have the juice to do that, would they?
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't even have the way, there wouldn't be a way, a migration plan to make that happen. You'd be gone, right?
Yeah. Until they run out of energy. This seems to be the thing, you really need high energy to combat this.
Oh, you mean as energy in the person itself?
Yeah,
individuals. Yeah, look at it. I mean, if Mr. Trump makes it 4 years, I'd be surprised, just with his health, I mean, it's what he goes through. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Man, they're all over him, and they're not going to stop.
On a daily basis.
They're not going to stop.
Hour by hour.
There's always this, keep coming up with stuff, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I just keep my eyes on the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to release the minutes of their May 1st meeting today.
Oh, today. Okay.
And we're also going to see data on U.S. new home sales. Tomorrow I think it's the Bank of England has a markets forum where they all talk about where the markets are. And they do the same thing in Russia on Friday. And you get everybody there, from the IMF director to the Japanese prime minister to the New York Fed president, and they talk and kind of hash out where it is we're heading.
Heading, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, higher interest rates most often, does it not equal to higher stock market?
No.
No?
No, quite the opposite. Higher interest rates.
Where did
you
get that? Higher interest rates.
Mm,
well, let's see. Higher.
It makes it more expensive to borrow, which makes it more expensive.
And it also
to leverage.
Makes it more attractive to lend to the government
or to lend to the bond market.
So that would make the stock market go down.
Correct.
So I had it opposite.
Yeah, I think everyone is expecting a correction in the equities market, but as you recall or may recall, what I've said for the better part of 2 years now is that the cracks in the wall will appear first in the bond market.
Yes. It's got to, right?
Yeah. And to me, this liquidity crunch that we're seeing and the lessening or relaxing of the Dodd-Frank rules to deal with the liquidity crisis, making more money available for the banks to lend and so forth, indicates that they're taking every measure that they possibly can to alleviate it or relieve it. But given that between now and the end of 2019, this refunding or refinancing crisis, whatever you want to call it, is just going to get worse and worse. You have trillions of dollars in corporate bonds due in that period.
Yeah, $4 trillion bonds over the next 5 years.
Yeah, well,
bonds just going to come due.
Yeah, wow. But and national debt as well, right? You have about $12 trillion there. But more importantly, what's due and payable in the next 1 year? So we want to look at the sort of the landscape in front of our face. And just like that baby boomer crush, this is kind of the peak of it the peak of it is coming midterm 2020, but the start of it is like right now, right now. And moving through the end of the second quarter, which you got another month, and then two more quarters by the end of this year, the liquidity crisis will be looming for everyone. And it'll start first in those emerging markets, Poland. So everywhere where investors went and they could borrow money for free from the Federal Reserve, how are we going to deploy this cash? Well, let's loan money to Argentina. Let's loan money to Poland. Let's loan money to the emerging markets in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And this is reminiscent of the Latin American crisis.
You can say it.
Of the 1980s, you know, where manufacturers Hanover had loaned 2.5 times its net worth to Latin America.
Wow.
And getting paid back was an issue, and they had to, you know, put together a bailout plan that rolled things over. So 10 years ago, when the Fed started making cheap, easy money available, all of the muckety-mucks ran to the emerging markets chasing higher yield. And a higher yield with low inflation gave them a buffer. So they were borrowing money at, say, 2% and loaning it at 6%. And this is coming to a head now as their inability. I mean, look at Argentina once again, finding itself unable to pay its dollar denominated.
Just can't pay it. No, we're not
paying. Italy can't pay it. Poland, Spain. I mean, the list is endless. And even China finds itself on the short end of the dollar borrowing stick, where it's borrowed all this dollar denominated debt and now simply has trouble raising the necessary dollars to pay. And everyone says, well, China has $2 trillion worth of U.S. Treasury debt. They could sell that and pay the bill. Sure, they could. And in doing so, they would further depress the U.S. bond market. So not only do you have the government of the United States borrowing $1 trillion or $2 trillion a year, you have the Federal Reserve unloading $1 trillion a year, and now you have the Chinese selling their treasury bonds as well, presumably the whole $2 trillion. So where does the selling stop? And more importantly, who's the buyer? If there's no buyer, then the bids will constantly go down.
Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, and it is the real world of money. Let's start to do a few emails here and see what folks are about. Hi, Andy. I've been listening to your show for about 7 years now, and you were the missing link I needed to understand how money works and level up. You and Patrick are awesome. Thanks for the show. I just sold my house, made $150,000, and moving to Disney World, my wife's favorite place to live in our RV. Oh, they're moving to Washington, D.C. That's great. Oh, I just kidding. Sorry. No.
That was good, Patrick.
Sorry.
Good. That was really
Fred
good.
In South Carolina is my coin guy. My coin foundation is solid. I have no debt. I'm 40, 2 kids, and my Army pension is more than enough to cover our monthly expenses.
How do
Man,
you
they're,
like
they're
that?
Doing good.
Yeah, they're set.
I was planning on holding the money and buying a 30-year U.S. bond when interest rates hit double digits. Wow.
Yes.
Then when rates fall, pledge the bond as collateral and buy more coins and sell the huge premium.
Wow, this guy has really paid attention.
This is actually a lady.
Oh, lady, forgive me, ma'am.
However, if you were me, what would you do with the money, especially while waiting for double-digit interest rates to arrive? All right, so she's got 150 Gs, and she wants to wait until 30 years or 10 or 15%, like it did in 19, 77 to 80.
Well, let's look at that as an example. So, let's say in 1977, I got this letter, and so at that time, I think a $20 gold piece was $160.
1977, $20.
And gold was like 100.
What'd you say? It was 176?
In 77, a $20 gold piece was $160.
Okay.
A decent uncirculated 20, but bought mostly not for its collectible value, but for its gold content. It's an ounce of gold, right? And so let's say you bought that coin for $160. Mm-hmm. And then by 1980, it was $3,200.
But that's because gold rocketed up then.
It did. It went from 103 to 850.
That's a lot.
But as you can see, the premium above spot for the $20 gold piece also rose as they became harder and harder to get. You're dealing with a limited supply there. So the premium went from 60% in 77 to nearly 300% in 1980.
Because you pay a percentage of the price.
Above spot.
Above spot.
So if you would have bought that $160 gold piece in 77, when interest rates were 4.5%, 5%, and you sold it in 1980, when interest rates were 17%, 18%, you would have made 10 times, 20 times your money in that period? Commissions notwithstanding. So maybe you made 15 times your money, minus commissions. And now you take that 15 times your 150 and put that into U.S. Treasury bonds and ride the crest, as it were. It went through the peak at 18 and change and then fell all the way back to 3% for 30-year, 3.24, I think.
Yeah, but
so not only did you 10 times, 15 times your money on the increase in gold, but then as rates fell from 18% down to 3%, you made 5 times your money on the bonds. So
but her name is Mary. So say if Mary waits, I don't know, she waits 3 years and interest rates get to 10%, right? Mm-hmm. The chances of gold doubling or tripling in that time, that's not going to happen.
Don't say that too loud, Patrick.
Really?
Yeah.
It could really?
Well, yeah. This is...
come on. That would be like...
People run to safety.
That would be like $6,000 gold.
That's what it would be. Yeah, $5,053.
So it would really go up that exponentially with the higher interest rates? I mean, huge.
Oh, heck yeah. Right. And more so...
Just like it did in 1970.
Yes, so decimation of the dollar. That's more important.
Well, the dollar's got a long way to go.
I see a dollar heading for 77.
From where it is today.
Where it is today. Mm. So on the U.S. dollar index, a $77 would necessarily mean gold in the mid-2000 range. Mm.
So you have a way that you can kind of predict higher gold prices without just putting on a good suit and going on TV late night, right, and slicking your hair back and say, well, that, you know, gold is going to go to $4,000, buy this coin.
Yeah, well, they can do that actually quite easily, you know, drive gold to $4,000 just to deal with the current crises, not even the ones that we haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. Huh. So that's not too hard to predict.